Blog Talk Radio.
Happening. And tonight is Tuesday, February the 12th, 2019. And we want to say this evening, with all that's going on, that the choices facing the American people are as follows: austerity and false, did you hear me? False populist leaders, i.e. Trump and any Democrat you can think of, or socialism. And we are saying that an anatomy of oppression requires anatomy of colonialism and imperialism, which is to say an anatomy of the American capitalist system. And before we start tonight, we have to ask our dear panelists to accommodate us. We have someone who's involved in rehearsals this evening and wants to go slightly ahead of our usual program panelist rundown. But I have a number of announcements, but we'll get to them later. We want to bring on our dear brother Ralph, and after that, we're going to have to accommodate one of our artists who has a special event.
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. What I believe
The overriding element in every situation or a circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time. And I will get back to that after Sister Betty moves our program along. Sister Betty.
Okay, as I said, we're changing our format a little bit this evening. As many of you know, tomorrow night in New York City, there is a program, Writing While Being Black: Challenges, Opportunities, and Rewards of Writing from the African Diaspora. And it's going to take place tomorrow, Wednesday, the 13th of February, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at 256 West 38th Street, 12th floor of the UAW Conference Room in New York City. And because of this event, we have a special request, and we know Brother Larry Pinkney will understand why we're changing our format, and Ralph is changing his format. Brother Matt Turner, as per your request, your mic is open. We know you have to make a quick getaway.
Okay. This piece is called If All Options Are on the Table. If all options are on the table, let's hear filters, usurping skull and crossbones, drinking water 400 times before it flows from a single faucet. If all options are on the table, let's hear boots on the ground and on ladders, meddling smoggy skies with windmills and solar panels. If all options are on the table, let's hear screaming propaganda of saws and chants of hammers connecting 2x4s, overthrowing tents, sleeping bags, cardboard mattresses, metastasizing as terror beneath bridges, freeways, and on cold streets across the country. If all options are on the table, let's hear stock market-like chatter, humanitarian intervention, making medical appointments for millions free, toppling infant mortality, cancer, heart attacks, strokes, coup d'etat, blockading buckets of weaponized chicken, sanctioning supersized sugary cannons of colored water, overthrowing dictatorial colonels and kings, removing millions of obese, waddling, overweight, malnourished Americans from harm's way. If all options are on the table, let's hear regime change, squealing and giggling from public school playgrounds, surrounded by well-supplied, well-paid public teachers, flashing strobe light smiles, seconding emotions of children. If all options are on the table, let's hear tellers counting currency and ATMs belching back pay at furloughed federal workers. If all options are on the table, these are our appetizers. Otherwise, shut the fuck up, finger pointing, posturing about democracy.
Alrighty, as we know, as Mr. Obama told us very clearly, And Mr. Trump is telling us those options are off the table. And we must remember that. And as I was saying at the beginning of the program, thank you so much for that, for Raymond Nat Turner. And gives us something to think about. And as the program was talking about choices facing the American people, austerity and false populist leaders, as in Trump, or any Democrat, or socialism. And so let's get right to that word, socialism, which seems to be a problem for the American. Now, I'm going to talk about my favorite definition of socialism is the policies one wants for oneself economically is socialism. But the people who oppose it at the same time do not want those policies for anyone else. And I first go to the U.S. Congress's medical plan. They have a medical plan that works for them. Everybody gets it, and it is free for everyone, and it is the best medicine that America can supply. Well, socialism is when we have it for everyone else. They want it for themselves, but the moment you say something, they scream. We can't afford it. But as I noticed, the people who are talking about what America can't afford, and that is the Republican Party, more so than the Democratic Party, and for 8 years, when Mr. Obama was president, there was constant talk about what cannot be afforded for the people. But now we see the national debt tops $22 trillion for the first time. Now, I don't know what $22 trillion is. I can't imagine a trillion. But when we talk about what a nation can afford and spend, one of the things I think about during the Iraq War, when a C-47 landed in Iraq with pallets of money taken off by forklifts, and it disappeared. I don't know how much money that was, but there was hardly a whimper from the American politicians, the American people. Where does that money go to? Who's got it? Because we know money doesn't disappear. And as with all monies, we know that certain people have it and certain people do not. But let's get back to that word, socialism. As a young man, I remember when the coal miners were fighting for health care in western Pennsylvania. John L. Lewis was the head coal miner. He was the leader of the mining union. And socialism, he wanted medical care and a living wage and living working conditions for the coal miners. The United Mine Workers, was he looking for socialism? We know that Social Security was a great thing, and while we know that Social Security, one of the things that my friends in Social Security keeps me from being on the street, a very good thing. But we know that many people today in the so-called red states, in the farm market, they oppose Roosevelt's electrifying the farms in the rural areas. As a matter of fact, 10 years ago, I heard a farmer say, because that was the last time I was working with farmers, a farmer say he opposed Roosevelt for his socialism. And Roosevelt made it possible for all of those small farmers to prosper. And I could go on. I'll come back. I've been told that we will get back to me later, but understand that the unions of America, when they were their strongest, and I'm talking not only John L. Lewis and United Mine Workers, but the steel workers and Detroit, everyone wanted a guaranteed annual wage and decent working conditions and medical benefits for their work. We didn't call it socialism, but it is certainly a social program. So let's stop being afraid of that word socialism, because as my favorite definition of socialism is, the policy one wants for themselves economically is socialism. They, at the same time, do not want these policies for anyone else. These are the people who are anti-social. But let me tell you, those Democrats who are accused, falsely accused of socialism, are not about socialism. And we see how quickly those who, new members who come into Congress in the Democratic Party, they said Nancy Pelosi has to go. And who is the main enemy to social change? Who is the right-wing imperialist in the Democratic Party? The head, the minority whip, the majority whip, Nancy Pelosi. And so let us get real about what we are talking about. But we don't have to go to Washington. Here we are in New York City. We're in the Bronx. As I mentioned last week, for 8 months, people didn't have heat in public housing, and they had to go to the fire hydrant to get water, and their apartments are loaded with all kinds of problems that will cause them death because there is not guaranteed medical care, no guaranteed annual salary. We, my friends, are hypocrites and in great. And there was never democracy in America. There was only privacy. And now that's gone. And I'll bring that up a little later in the program. Sister Betty.
Okay, without further ado, there are lots of announcements. And we're going to go to Brother Larry next. We thank Brother Larry for being so patient. We appreciate his willingness. Brother Nat, Raymond Nat Turner, is going to be performing tomorrow, and he has to leave early for rehearsals this evening. But we are not the rest. For poets, you know we have our other poet in residence who will be coming up shortly. At this time, though, I must make a very quick announcement that we have lost a great Black liberation warrior, yes. Sister Nahanda, and her going away celebration will be on the 16th of February, Saturday, at the National Black Theater, and it will be at 12 noon this coming Saturday. And the National Black Theater of Harlem is between 125th and 126th Street in the village known as Harlem on 5th Avenue. And right after that, you got to get your sneakers on because you got to run all the way up to the Church of the Holy Rood, because there is a special panel and a discussion and talk back on Puerto Rican and Black solidarity. This panel will be taking place, as I said, at the Church of the Holy Rood, which is on 179th Street in Northwest Harlem, Holy Rood Church. And that program is from 2 to 4 with special guests, panelists from the Young Lords and Professor Johanna Fernandez, as well as activist and scholar Hank Williams. And with, before we go to Brother Larry Pinckney, I want you also to know that there is a national event. Those of us who support the initiative to get the fascists out of Venezuela, our day of solidarity, the International Day of Actions to Stop U.S. War and Mobilize in Support of Venezuela, will be February the 23rd. And I want to just give you quickly, take out your pen and pencil, the places where there will be protests: Atlanta, Georgia, Boston, Massachusetts, Houston, Texas, Minneapolis, Minnesota, New York City, Portland, Oregon, Tucson, Arizona, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And there will be a protest as well in Washington, D.C. So we want you to be aware that wherever you are, there will be, there is a program in support of Venezuela. But if you have issues and cannot get to where it is in your state, you can go to Jericho's website, because they are featuring the information from the International Action Center, and there's a place where you can click on and do your own thing and let everybody know what you are doing in your state. So I apologize for these long messages, but they were absolutely essential. Wherever we are, we have got to put a stop to the death of the Venezuelan workers and peasants. Without further ado, and I certainly hope Brother Larry Pinckney's ears are burning, because I was thinking about him today, and we know this genocide holiday Valentine's Day, they call it, is coming up. And I seem to remember very, very early in our program, Brother Larry Pinckney had some interesting comments on Valentine's Day. Brother Larry, your mic is open, and we've got several guests that are hanging in the wings tonight, one of which I think Brother Larry is responsible for bringing on board. Brother Larry Pinckney, thank you for understanding. Your mic is open.
Thank you, thank you, thank you very, very much, Sister Professor Betty Davis. Thank you, Brother Ralph Poynter. Let me be brief. I know that the house is full. As always, I want to begin by saying, free our political prisoners. I repeat, free our political prisoners. Free them now. They are languishing in these death camp gulags called prisons. We must free them. They have stood tall, long, and proud to defend us, be they black, white, brown, red, or yellow. They have stood for all of the people. They must be freed. I'm not going to actually take very long this evening. I'm looking forward to hearing, as always, from everyone on the panel. And I have, as you all know, I have a special interest in political prisoners in the U.S. So I'm looking forward to hearing, I hope, Sister Ann Lamb, because she always has so much incredible information. I'm also looking forward to hearing another panelist, a guest by the name of Reva Inteen. Sister Reva, I'm looking forward to hearing everyone else as well. Let me go back very quickly and point out that we must stay fixated, if you will, on our political prisoners, understanding that they are us and we are them. I believe Sister Betty, I believe it was last week, said, I like the way she said it. It was wonderful. She said, we, i.e. everyday ordinary people out here, are in minimum security. We are in minimum security. Our political prisoners are in maximum security. Let's show some prisoner solidarity, okay, and get them out. Get them out at least to minimum security, what they call free society. Hint, hint. So I'm without further ado, I don't want to take up a lot of time. As I said, I'm looking forward to hearing everyone on what everyone has to say. Let's think in terms of being effective. How can we be effective? We must be effective. Okay, we can talk about all of these things, but let's be effective. So I'm going to end. I'm going to end as I began by saying free all of our political prisoners. And as far as so-called Valentine's Day is concerned, the best way we can show our love is to show love to each other, to our political prisoners. And as far as that goes, that's what it's all about. Free our political prisoners. All power to the people. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Brother Larry. And I think next up is Reva.
Oh, California.
From California. Reva.
Hey, thanks. Thanks.
Is open.
I'm on. Thank you so much, Betty and Ralph, and thanks. So real quick, too, because I like talking to Larry beforehand to sort of get in gear. And I'd actually most prefer posing a question with most of my time. But, Ralph, first of all, that there was no heat in public housing for 8 months is amazing. And, again, it reflects my question, which is how can we be more effective at getting those kind of outrageous in New York? It's like the richest country in the world. There's so much organizing, but I never heard that. That's terrible. And also in terms of socialism, I see it a slightly different way, which is that Bernie popularized the word socialism, and he won the Rust Belt on socialism, and people aren't as afraid of it anymore, and a lot of the millennials identify with it. But then the question is it meaning anything? Because the Democrats in Congress who call themselves socialists, sort of, have a foreign policy that would bomb everybody to kingdom come. So in my mind, you can't be a socialist if you don't see as an internationalist, right? And but it's interesting. I mean, I think the positive thing is that Bernie helped demystify it or make it less scary. But now let's bring back what it really means, which is, as Ralph said, what's good for all the people, frankly. So the other quick thing I wanted to mention is in terms of the book that I've talked about, which has Ralph and Larry on the back and Mumia writing the foreword, it was a labor of love, so I would send the book to people at cost if it could be used as a fundraiser. So feel free, Betty, to pass on my email to anybody. The cost is $11 a book, and it could sell for more than that. So the point is I would like the book out there. And then the last thing is really the question, a little bit about Mumia. Betty and I had a little interchange beforehand because I happened to look at one of the articles that she sent us that was in The Intercept, and Krasner had the nerve to say, I quote, that his previous discovery of 6 boxes of evidence in the case, which he turned over to the defense, should be evidence of his commitment to a just outcome. Huh. And that's bullshit, because by law he has to turn over the evidence. It would have been illegal for him not to. So for him to say that's evidence of his commitment to a just outcome is bullshit. And it brings me to, again, the question I want to pose, which is how can we be more effective in our resistance? And to me, 2 immediate cases in point are nailing Krasner to the wall for lying like that, like Mumia had a chance of freedom and now it's less likely. And also Venezuela. It's like that there's still only 3 Democrats who are saying this is a U.S.-led coup, we should not do it. It's, as a friend of mine said, we've seen this movie before, and how many times? Anyway, so Larry raised it because that's the question is effective. How can we be more effective? We're so used to losing, frankly, at this point. And feeling like going back to Organizing 101, and was that before we had email and, you know, all these other Facebook things? But I agree with you, Betty, that Venezuela is in our face and we should stop it in our tracks because of what it's going to do to the Venezuelan people. And then we should nail Krasner to the wall. And then how do we do that? Or whatever else, how can we be more effective? And I think I'm going to stop there. And thank you for inviting me on.
Well, thank you so much for that. And as to the question as to how we can be more effective, we have to turn our social organizations that have political overtones into real political organizations. And a political organization demands honesty between those people in the organization. We lie to each other constantly. We, as example, is New York, where this situation goes on, and we don't go to our Democratic friends and say, what the hell are you doing? Why are you supporting this organization? Why are you supporting the people that they select for us to be elected? How is it that we don't have to go anywhere to see where voter suppression is practiced? It's in New York by the Democrats who kept Bernie off the ballot.
And Gwen.
And they just do this constantly on every level. And we do not confront our friends to say, how are you not raising these issues in your organization? Because we lack the necessary courage. And as Lynn says, a real political act. When I say Lynn, I hope everybody recognizes our dear sister Lynn Stewart. She says, a real political act is telling the truth, being honest in our most personal surroundings, at home, with our family, in our churches, in our organizations. We must be honest and tell the truth to our associates, and that is a way that we can be more effective.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. I want to add to what he said. We ran a number one top candidate for the public advocacy vacancy in New York City, and she was shut out. And that was the Democratic Party that did it. But let me tell you how effective she was. I saw an email that is circulating where the people in various communities that are being gentrified are demanding that all of the candidates who are running as public advocates must sign a pledge that they will fight gentrification. And that is due to the woman and the sister and the warrior, Gwen Goodwin, who put it on the table. And she didn't just put it on the table for her campaign. This has been her life fight for over a decade. So I know what Brother Larry is saying. How can we be more effective? And we have proven it with her campaign that we can be more effective if we hold their feet to the fire.
And when she stood up and spoke before the Democratic Party hacks who didn't want her to speak, and she says, I support political prisoners and community control of schools, She got a motion, as no one else got a response from the audience. Yes, we can do it, and we just have to figure out how to bring organizations that we belong to face the truth. Sister Betty.
All right, one more announcement. Brother Gil can't be here, but things are happening. Sunday, February the 24th, right after our support of Venezuela nationwide, there will be a demand and a call to action for white people to return diamonds and other stolen resources. Yeah, it's called All Diamonds Are Blood Diamonds, Reparations Now. And this is a program which is sponsored by European Americans against the Holocaust that is taking place in Africa. And the time for this event is on, these flyers are 7 p.m., and it's at the Uhuru Solidarity Center at 616 East 9th Street. That's 616 East 9th Street in New York City. It's called Reparations Now, Africa's Resources in Africans' Hands. All diamonds are blood diamonds, and the action that they're calling for is for white people to return the diamonds. Without further ado, we want to take a pause for our poet, second poet in residence, Brother Professor Louis, because he's always, like Brother Larry, he's always there on the dime, and he always, like Brother Raymond, gives us encouragement in the face of the belly of the beast. Professor Louis, your mic is open.
And before that, Professor Louis, I want to clarify what Sister Penny Hess means when she says return your diamonds. That doesn't mean give them away. That means go get your money back from the diamond dealers, from the jewelry dealers, which will be a blow to the diamond industry because diamonds are as common as dirt. They just have you paying price for it because they create the shortage.
And I want to send Gil Obler's apologies. He's working on this program, so he was not able to be here this evening. And Sister Colia sends her apologies this week. For those of you who do not know, Sister Colia's son is in a coma. He has three children, 15, 13, and 12, and he's been in a coma for quite some time in Georgia, and the Medicaid office is advising that they can no longer support or provide assistance to the family. So when you hear Brother Ralph talk about the need for single-payer health care now, this is a real issue that we are all facing. And so Sister Colia had to take care of emergency family support at this point because the news just came in from the Medicaid office. Professor Louis, your mic is open.
All right. Burning. The young bloods went in burning. There was no turning back, Jack, down at Broadway and Grand. They had their Jim Johnsons in their hand. In a heartbeat, Rover, it was over. No one called Jehovah. The blood ran red, but the gold had fled. The whistle was blown, but the money had flown. The roller showed, but everyone had blowed with a tremendous stash, thousands in cash that didn't last too long. That was all spent and gone after getting it on for three solid weeks of big-time freaks, three solid weeks of party that was much more than hearty. New music, new clothes, new treats to put up the nose, new girls, new smoke, new pills, new coke, but ah, the dues that had to be paid, the sure enough blues when you're not afraid of the trap that was laid, the cage that was made for animals but filled with men, gone to the pen, some never going to see the street again, buried alive in a hard rock jail, had to survive, no mail, no bail, buckets of tears, walled up for years, bricked up, tricked up, and sent up to die. Once the people could fly, but by and by, now it's clubs and chains, oceans of pain, the wasted lives, piled one on top the other, once a month visit from your mother or brother, a living, breathing fatality in the hard, white hands of brutality. No family, no friends, no chance to make amends, nothing to defend, all coming to an end in the big house upstate, locked down behind iron gates in the cold steel jaws of the penitentiary, where we finally got a pause, cause it's elementary to know, fast or slow, when the young warriors feel the heat of the street to their feet, feel the need to beat sometimes and not always lose, feel the blues rising under the skin, the news coming in, maybe we can win. Then now's the time to tell that we must study well the world around us, the darkness and power that's around us, trick bags shining in the sun, know well which way to run, know well which way to point the gun. If the weight must fall, and fall it must, don't let it fall right back on us. Before you dance out on the warpath in your trance or romance, better do the math. Before you step out with your truly righteous anger, don't be another headbanger in a bar, some little ripoff of Ma and Pa, a little run for the money that won't go far. Before you step out with your truly righteous hatred, don't let it be you who's got to pay for it, lost in a world with nothing for you. There is always something that you can do. The children need you, and you know it's true. You can let the children judge you. Grandma down the block needs you a lot, and you can let the children judge you. Your brother needs you. What you gonna say? And you can let the children judge you. Your sister needs you every day, and you can let the children judge you. Your daddy needs you. Don't throw it away. And you can let the children judge you. Your mama needs you in every single way, and you can let the children judge you. All the children, near and far, the children need you out of the bar. The children need you with or without a car. The children need you just like you are, and you can let the children judge you.
Much for that, Professor Louis. That reminds me of one of the things we used to speak about in the 60s when we were trying to educate our youth as to what has value, what is worth fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
And we were not successful, and this is what you're telling us. Educate the youth as to what is worth fighting for. And earlier in the program, we discussed what would Americans do if they understood that America is an empire, just like the Roman Empire was an empire, destroying the earth, destroying species, destroying people, and for the wealthy, the citizen, the so-called Roman citizen. Everyone else suffered. And as I said, Joel gave us a fine definition as to why the American people do what they do. And so therefore, Joel, we're going to open up your mic to discuss whatever it is you want to discuss. Joel Myers, your mic is open. Joel Myers, your mic is open. Cannot hear you. Get off mute, Joel. All righty. Let's go to Ann Lamb. I hear her. Ann, your mic is open.
We'll come back to you, Joel.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's always an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to be on this wonderful program. I was just got an email from our brother Kojo. Kojo was in USP Canaan. They are currently once again on lockdown. So this is like an ongoing thing. So he just wrote to me to say, once again, we're on lockdown. I'm trying to get in to visit him myself. He just sent me the visiting form, which I have to fill out and all that. So hopefully that will happen, and hopefully when I go to visit him, he won't be on lockdown, because then I can't visit. So, you know, that's the story with that. Sundiata sends regards to everybody. Sundiata Coley, you know, he's back in Cumberland, Maryland, and he's busy trying to straighten out his list, because even though he has people that are on his list, they show up and they're told that they're not on his list. So he's dealing with that right now, which is difficult. He said it's all backed up, and hopefully it will all be cleared up by March. And I said, oh, that would be nice, because then you can try to add me to your list. And he said, will do. So that's a couple of things that are going on immediately. Of course, we are involved with this whole, you know, U.S. hands-off Venezuela, or whatever it is you want to call it, you know, against U.S. intervention and coup attempts in Venezuela. So very interesting stuff going on. And to put Elliot Abrams there, I was like, oh, God, not him again, you know. I was actually living in Nicaragua at the height of the Contra War in the 1980s, and I can tell you that even U.S. proxy wars, because they weren't using U.S. troops, they were using Nicaraguans to fight their dirty war for them, they were some of the most horrible terrorists you would ever want to see. Ronald Reagan's Freedom Fighters.
Yeah, I like that. Ronald Reagan's Freedom Fighters.
That's what
Whoa.
He called them. Yes, he did. Ah. And they were just awful. They were busy raping little girls, killing pregnant women, ripping open people's wombs and throwing eight-month-old babies up on their bayonets. You know, some of the most... I saw these things with my own eyes. I am an eyewitness to this, all right? So this is like some of the most horrible stuff you would ever want to see anybody do. And they were cowards as well, because whenever they were confronted by the Nicaraguan People's Army, they would go run across the border, all right, either north or south. They were gone real quick. If they saw somebody actually standing up to them on an equal footing, they ran away. But they always came back, you know, and that was their whole basis, was to attack civilians, attack helpless women, children, elders, you know, and they were very good at it. And actually, Nicaragua did take the United States to the World Court over all this and did win in the World Court, not that Nicaragua ever expects to see a penny of this money, but was awarded $4 billion by the World Court for all the destruction that had happened in Nicaragua due to this U.S. dirty war. And, you know, we know that the U.S. has a long history in Latin America. You know, we can remember Jacobo Arbenz, right, 1954, Chile, 1973, and I'm sure there were other things in between. You know, the United States likes to think that they can do whatever they want in Latin America. So they're very upset by anybody who stands up to them, and that's why they've been upset by Venezuela, you know, since the get-go, because in addition to everything else, Venezuela has, I believe, the largest oil reserves in the world. So, you know, no blood for oil, right? What
yes,
are we really fighting
true.
About here? You know, we're fighting about natural resources, which they also have plenty of, as in addition to the oil. But the oil is a big goal, as we always know. They go to the Middle East to fight for oil, you know. So here's Venezuela, you know, not too far away. And other peoples in Latin America are already standing up to this. Not everybody's going along, you know. And the Colombian FARC has already said, if the United States dares to do this, we will fight on right side by side with the Venezuelan people against this. So, you know, there's all kinds of very serious stuff going on here. But well, remember Elliot Abrams. He is a war criminal. He was pardoned by Bush, the senior, for his war crimes. So, you know, we know the history of this country, and they want to talk about socialism being bad. The only kind of socialism that I know that is bad is the kind that Adolf Hitler did, national socialism. That was not socialism as we know it, all right? You know? So there are some countries that actually practice socialism very well. Cuba is one, right? I've been to Cuba several times. It's a wonderful country. I felt so wonderful. I felt like I was literally in a free country. I couldn't believe it. I was like, OMG, this is like amazing. And then I had to come back to this. So, you know, this country wants to talk about democracy, freedom, whatever the hell they bullshit, you know, that they like to say. You know, all my friends are sitting in these damn gulags, and there's going to be plenty more of us in these gulags as time goes on. So, you know, we're getting new
and we must,
prisoners every day, right?
We must be prepared to support and bring our prisoners home. Who we know are going to go. And when anyone talks about democracy, we must remember that the duly elected president of Egypt, Mohamed Morsi, is in jail.
That's right.
Serving time that was created by the coup supported by the American government.
And let's not forget that they removed Aristide, who was voted for by over 70% of the people in Haiti. So we know what they mean by democracy.
Yes. They mean the democracy of the cemetery, you know. As long as you're dead, we'll call it democracy. You know, what's going on in Haiti right now is really amazing, too, and it's not being talked about in the news. There's been all kinds of major, major, major demonstrations against the current imposed so-called president, and it doesn't get very much coverage in the United States press. You have to go elsewhere to find this news. So, you know, it's
but
interesting
that,
not... Yeah,
that reminds me of Ernesto Che Guevara when he says the giant be brought down when there are wars in all of the small countries while the American government is doing it for us.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because of the number of guests that we have on the line, we are going to extend our program. But without further ado, we want to see if Joel's able to touch bases with us now, we're going to try and open his mic again. Joel, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yes,
now.
We can.
Yes.
Once again, we want to let you know we will be extending the broadcast.
Oh, great. Okay. So,
hang in there, Gwen. Good.
I want to get back to that. Excuse me?
We just wanted to let Gwen know to hang
just
in there. We can hear you.
Hang in there. We can hear you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wanted to hear some more about the this email that's going around. There's only one candidate in that whole race, so-called race, phony election, or really election, because there's a certain process where even when they're not openly and transparently miscounting the votes, as in the selection of George W. Bush, there's a selection process before the election is even in gear, where there are certain nominees that are understood to be in the running, and everybody else is in the walking, as in money talks and bullshit walks, is the very American expression, actually, because that's the way the things actually work. So this idea of you have all these candidates running around. Most of them are, even the ones that can talk of a catching line here and there in their con game, a lot of them are landlords themselves. Almost all these politicians are either landlords themselves, or they're totally in with the landlords in their neighborhoods, and nothing but mouthpieces for the landlords. And we see that they talk to some degree about gentrification, but every time you turn around, you see another Derek, or you see another crane with a wrecking ball, and you see all the old buildings that used to be the life of the community being torn down. Steel and glass is being put in their place, and more and more of the rents, they talk about affordable housing, and the very expression when they call it affordable housing means that that's the exception, that most people can afford housing in this in this country. A lot of people are doubled up and tripled up, and the buildings that used to have apartments where somebody could raise, where a family could be raised, you know, like three bedrooms or something that working people actually used to live in, now it's all cut up into these mini studios, and then those are again people doubled and tripled up. And that's really one of the basic necessities of living is shelter, food, shelter, and clothing. The only time that word usually is used is what they call the homeless shelter, where people that don't have a real home are, if they're lucky, they can get a roof over their head. Even then, in a lot of these places like the drop-in centers where you could sleep, they force you to sit in a chair all night. They don't allow people to lie down on the floor.
Right.
So nobody can get any real sleep. Mm-hmm. And people that are in shelter situations, their hours are monitored. They can't get in later than a certain night. Their entire lives are in condition. It's like a prison in the streets. Although I don't want to equate it, because the conditions in the prisons are so much worse, but we're all being treated more and more like prisoners even if you're in the streets, and again, the streets, that's a term used in prison, like meaning not yet in an actual prison, they say, in the streets. So I'm saying even people that have some kind of roof over their head, more and more, but being treated as prisoners, and that's has to do with the whole function of the development of a police state, which is another thing that I understand Gwen got some applause for when she brought that up, even at the meeting of all these Democratic hangers-on in the beginning, when they allowed her to participate and speak. We only won. After that, she was barred completely. She mentioned that we're living in a growing police state, and
we are.
People really related to that. And like I say, that's the she's the only one out there that's running, and that's why they're so afraid, because they feel so insecure in being able to tell their lies, and they know that people are getting angrier, and they've seen that before too, and they know how that can end in a revolution. And it's slowly, I think, building up to that, although we still have a long way to go. But deep down, you can't see it really, because it's inside people's heads. But deep down, people are more and more aware that we are all being ruled by really a handful of super rich and some of their political hirelings. And there's no really, you talk about like democracy, people don't even have a voice
that's right.
to criticize or anything that's tolerated. I mean, you can criticize how best to run the system of exploitation and oppression, but you can't criticize the system itself, at least not with much amplification. And if you begin to make waves, then that's what they have that police state for. Like, I remember a few years ago, we used to have weekly speakouts in Union Square Park, and almost every week somebody was arrested. Or if not one, two, or three. And these cases went on, you know, oh, you're not allowed to use a bullhorn in the park, or you're not allowed to use a bullhorn in the street. You have to have a permit to use a bullhorn. That's what they call free speech, right? Now, if you're hawking some wares on the street, you know, you're selling if you're selling corporate products or something and you have a little bullhorn, they don't mind that. But when
right.
you're talking politics, all of a sudden you see the constabulary showing up, and you can't use that bullhorn. And that means also the people don't have the right to hear anything. It's not that you aren't, I mean, you have the right and they have the right, but these rights are being trampled on by the state in the name of democracy, right here. So, what? That's
well, you
really,
got that.
You know. So if that's what's happening over here, now the rest of the world, it's there's no democracy there, because you have all totally unequal countries. You have this whole immigration problem. People are trying to get in through the southern border. But why would somebody want to leave their own country that they were born and grew up in, where they speak the language, where they relate to the other people and the culture? Why would they want to come here? Because because of the degree of starvation and poverty that's created by the corporations and combined with the military of this country stealing the resources and the labor power countries and leaving them basically nothing, leaving them in starvation, and then the wealth is brought here.
Exactly.
It's all it goes from there to here, and then people wonder, well, why is everybody trying to get into here? Well, we have this border that's spoken about as if it was a holy thing that nobody else can come here, where that property has been deposited and stolen to and destroyed. We have this turning where the whole country is like a gated community. And
yep.
I like that analogy.
The whole country is like a gated community. We all know what that means. We have a long way to go, Joel. Would you finish up quickly? We have people waiting in the wings.
Once again, we're extending the program, but we want to make sure we get in all of our guests.
So for that reason, we have to begin standing together. A lot of people see injustices all around them, but, you know, they don't want to intervene. They say, I'm not going to get into trouble. I'm not going to when you look at it in the more collective way, the most dangerous thing is not to get involved in fighting this, because it's like, you know, you have a certain type of disease or something, and it can be helped by an operation, and you don't want to get the operation. And that's what a revolution is all about, that we have a very serious disease that is destroying the lives of so many people and actually threatens to destroy all life on Earth just by its profitable negligence with the environment itself. They could produce a runaround greenhouse effect. Right now, they're even talking about how coastal cities might be inundated, that is, destroyed, drowned in water, and so on. And they talk about that as the end point, whereas we're facing a lot worse if we don't stand up and overthrow this system and create a real democracy, real people's power to operate in the material interests of the people. First step being concentrating, freeing our prisoners, and envisioning and training other people to envision. Every time you see a politician speak, imagine that they were speaking in front of the prison where they locked everybody else up. And now they're out there making these nice, pretty speeches.
Okay, Joel, we're going to have to.
We live in. Okay.
We're going to have to cut you off at that point and call in Gwen Goodwin.
And we want Brother Tom to be ready to take the mic after Gwen. Brother Tom, your mic will open as soon as Sister Gwen gives us an update. Sister Gwen, your mic is open. And thank you, Brother Joel.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for all of your service. It's really so great to hear. I'm so fascinated with everybody's stories, and it's amazing the things you've done. I'm so intrigued. And Joel, you're fabulous. What I wanted to say was, to start with, is that I was reading on the way home tonight that Mitch McConnell is now going to introduce the new Green Deal to the Senate, and they're going to have a vote on it on Tuesday. This is also interesting. If I'm right about this, the Green Deal was put together by the Green Party. I'm pretty sure I'm right about that. And I just think that it would be a courtesy for anybody who's talking about it to at least include the fact that this was conceived by the Green Party, if I'm right about this, and just give credit due where credit is due. I mean, this wasn't plucked out of the sky by Cortez, and this was put together thoughtfully, party who's been working for years to better the environment. So I am intrigued that McConnell's, first of all, talking about Cortez, and he's saying that they're going to vote on this on Tuesday. I still kind of wonder how she got in. I do think she was selected, and I think this is her mission. Her mission was to be the catapult for all of this. And I don't think that she just magically overthrew this guy that was there for 10 sessions, but that's that. I also wanted to tell Ralph the amount of money that fell off the trucks and it got lost in Iraq was $6 billion. That's how much money. It was truckloads of money that went missing in Iraq. So I just wanted to go back to that. Today I was
Thank
on the
you.
Radio, and we were discussing the federal workers and whether or not they were going to be furloughed again. And, you know, I said to the host that she wondered why they had not come out, why they had not gone on strike, and whether they were being threatened by the unions. And I said, well, you know, if they would come out and strike, it would be a wonderful, wonderful starting point, because if 800,000 workers came out to strike, I bet you there would be at least 800,000 other Americans that would come out and lock arms with them in solidarity with the fact that they were not getting paid, and just a starting point to change this system, overthrow it, as Joel says, because it really is a disaster. And I wondered how that would be, and, you know, because I was thinking about how when Trump said that he was going to not let any more people come into the country, how people on their own went out to the airports to stand in solidarity with immigrants. And I think it's something to think about, especially with union leaders, that they should be encouraging these people to come out and actually strike. I also wanted to say that I wondered why, if America was going to go and steal Venezuela's resources, if that was enough to have a war about, why couldn't we have a war with Bolsonaro to save the rainforest? Because, after all, that's what's going to finish us off. If he flattens out that rainforest and turns it into grazing land for cows, the whole human race is finished. We're that close to the end. So that would be interesting to me. And I was also really, I'm very, very on board with going to protest against the coup in Venezuela. I think it's stunning how in your face it is that we are going to go over and overthrow a sovereign government, and how the media, every single one of them, is just falling. Well, not falling. They're actually creating. They're creating this line of this government not being sovereign, of this man that calls himself a president, who has never been elected to any office, but he's calling himself the president of the country, and how they're the media is just lining up these ducks for them. Just goes to show you how easy it is if you have the media on your side. I think the hardest thing that has been for me to contend with is the silencing by the media, by the Democratic Party, and it's a very hard thing to cope with when you are not allowed to speak. And I think that's probably the number one problem that all activists face today, is that when you have a media that is owned by a couple of billionaires, it's very hard. I'll never forget that, you know, the minute I went up against Mayor Bloomberg, I never, ever have another article in the newspaper again. I had 11 articles up to that point in the New York Times, several other articles in different newspapers. And the minute I said that he should not, well, it wasn't just that. It was his getting rid of so many people through evictions in New York City, and then him taking a third term. I mean, I think of all of the mayors we've had in New York, he has been the most damaging, because he was the power fist in the velvet glove. I don't think people realize how many people were displaced under Bloomberg, and he's still running the system, because if you see these buildings going up, you see that basically the current mayor is doing exactly what Bloomberg did. We're tearing down whole blocks at a time. We're putting up these glass buildings. These glass buildings are very bad for the environment. They do not hold heat in. They take more to heat, and they take more to cool, and yet every single brick-and-mortar building is going down to be replaced by these pieces of junk. So I'm going to leave it there for tonight and thank everybody for all your kind words. I'm not finished with politics. I'm just getting ready for the next
round. Right on, right on. We need you.
Okay? So we're still going up there, all right?
Right on, right on. And I'd like to correct you, though. When you talk about the Democrats, you want them to speak up. Well, I wish Nancy Pelosi would shut up, because she's supporting the Venezuela. And I'm saying, who's going to wing the Republicans? Only the Democrats.
Yes, I have to say, that was the one thing I said I was saying on the radio the other day. when he was when Trump was supposed to speak that night, I said, the only thing I'm going to be looking for tonight is to see if she claps after he talks about Venezuela. And she did, and there she is supporting this illegal coup. And it's disgusting. It really is disgusting. There's only a handful, like there's only three Democrats that are against this, and it is stunning to me. And they're even bolder now than they've ever been before because they're not even making any qualms about it. And shame on WNYC Radio. If I hear those little twerps get out there or Twitter being tweeted about talking about something they know nothing about, they're so stupid, or the BBC. It's sickening. It really is sickening. All right. I'll leave you on that happy note.
Thank you so much for that, Gwen. And as one of the foreign European journalists talk about the American situation with journalists, I think the word he used was abysmal. And there is no journalism in America. It's all corporate, you know, mouthpieces mouthing the government's position. On that, and that note, this is Sister Betty.
Okay, folks, please hang in there and try to keep your background noise to a minimum. We've got all mics open. As you notice, we enjoy the exchange between the panelists. Brother Tom, your mic is open, and we notice that we have a friend who has returned this evening. I don't know if Brother Rico wants to speak, but his mic is open as well. Brother Tom, your mic is open. We missed you last week. We're glad you're back.
Thank you. Greeting to all my brothers and sisters on this blog. I'm sorry that I missed the blog last Wednesday, but I wanted to hear President Trump's State of the Union message that he addressed to the Congress and to the American people, how he was going to explain State of the Union, which is in a state of severe decadence. And the method he used was just to tell a series of whopping lies. And every time he told a lie, not only the Republicans, but their partners in crime, the Democrats, sitting there in Congress, gave him a standing ovation.
Oh, my God.
Now, one of the lies he told was that we have the greatest economy in the world, and that's because we're not socialist. We are a capitalist country. But the fact of the matter is, in recent years, the United States has achieved very, very low economic growth. In order to give a boost to the economy, instead of helping out the average working class person in this country, the Trump administration gave a humongous tax break of hundreds of billions of dollars to the big corporations. Now, these corporations they use that money not to hire new workers, not to bring their production from overseas back into the country, but they used it to buy more stocks, and the stock market went up a bit. Well, this was all very good for them, but of course not for the rest of the American people. But as I said, the growth rate of the United States is struggling to even get up to 3%. On the other hand, a country like China, whose economy also is on the skids, they had a growth rate this past year of twice that of the United States, 6.5%, which is much lower than they've had in recent years. And China has become the second most important economy in the world. And the real wages of Chinese workers as compared to the wages of American workers have gone up 400% in the last 12 years. And what happened to the real wages, and I'm talking about wages adjusted for inflation, for the average American worker? It hasn't gone up hardly anything. And so here we have a huge lie about put out that this is the greatest economy in the world. Now, another lie is about this wall that the Trump administration wants to put on the Mexican border to keep out those evil Mexicans and Central Americans. This is oh, by the way, do you know that he came to an agreement with the leadership of the Democratic Party, and both Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer were on television. Instead of they're going to give him $2 billion to build this wall. It's not the $5 billion that he was asking for, but they're supporting building this wall. Now, the lie here is that we need this wall to protect the American people, the American worker, against illegal competition from workers south of the border, and that these people, many of them, are criminals, drug dealers, who knows what, and that we have to protect the American people. Well, the population of the United States is about 325 million. It's estimated there are about 10 million undocumented immigrants here in the United States. The fact of the matter is that if we were to export all of those 10 million, it wouldn't make any difference whatsoever in helping our economy. In fact, it would probably further have negative effects, because a lot of the American economy, like agribusiness or restaurant business, depends upon cheap undocumented labor. And so as I said before, to give a boost to big corporations, and by the way, it wasn't the big corporations that are helping the economy. It was the American government with our money to give them this huge tax break. And this has caused a widening of the inequality of wealth in this country. And so Trump, he says that we will never be a socialist country, that he hates socialism. Well, unwittingly, Trump is probably fostering our American interest in socialism, because it's becoming more and more painfully evident to the American worker that capitalism is not working. And then he goes on with foreign policy. He actually said that a great nation like the United States should not be involved with constant wars, that we should approach our foreign, we should start getting out of these wars. Well, here again, another whopping lie. This country is, as Martin Luther King pointed out, the biggest purveyor of violence in the world. We are the most imperialist nation, and we have constantly supported brutal regimes with coup d'etats and invasions. In fact, we're sending over, can you get a load of this? We're sending over some more troops to Iraq to keep an eye on what's happening in Iran. Now, what are these troops going to do? Are we going to give them extra powerful binoculars to look over the Iranian border? I mean, how ridiculous this whole thing is. Well, the fact of the matter is, the thing that keeps this economy afloat, as fragile as it is the industrial military complex. Our weapons industry. We manufacture very little more, and as far as our agriculture goes, we have caused this immigration from Latin America because our agribusiness is undercutting these small farmers in Latin America. So here we have a State of the Union message, very, very well crafted, and but it should really be called the State of Hypocrisy, the State of Outright Lies. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, because we must understand that corporate socialism is accepted by the American people. They've conned people into believing, supporting military waste, supporting the Pentagon, where the black hole of dollars is, where money disappears. They support large corporate farms where money disappears, subsidy after subsidy. But when you say a little bit of socialism for the average Joe on the street, then there's a no, no, no. And as I mentioned earlier in the program, when we see that for 8 years, the Republicans talked about the debt can't go, and the moment they get in, you know, like the debt goes off the charts. And the Democrats are right alongside of them, not raising these issues, but giving the Pentagon whatever it is they want and never investigating corporate theft. Mr. Betty.
Before we go back and let those of you who were so kind to leave space for the guests this evening, Brother Rico, your mic is open. Did you want to add a few comments this evening, or are you just listening?
Just listening. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you. It's good to have you back. I want to remind you once again that tomorrow evening in New York City, there will be a free event open to all writers, and light refreshments will be served. It's called Writing While Black, and it's going to be at the UAW Union Office Conference Room, 256 West 38th Street, from 6 to 9 p.m., and the event is free. It's 256 West 38th Street in Manhattan, 12th floor, and our brother Raymond will be one of the presenters. So if you're in New York City and you're in Manhattan between 6 to 9 tomorrow evening, Wednesday, February 13th, please come out and support our poet in residence. Okay. But before we open up the mic, I also want to give special kudos to the Jericho website. There is so much information on there today, including an email that was sent out about our actor, Danny Glover, and his comments on the history of the United States imperialist record in Latin America and his total support for the freedom of the Venezuelan people. It's a must read. Check out the Jericho emails. Before I turn the mic open to everybody and to Brother Ralph again, I want to remind you of something Brother Larry said. He said, it's heartbreaking to observe the antics of so many young people today in their 20s and 30s who refuse to read, seriously study, learn from, and respect the history and political struggle of those who went before them. And he goes on to talk about the original National Black Panther Party and their belief in serving the people, body and soul, and their political platform and program, and genuine support of relevant education and jobs, decent, affordable housing, Medicare, and an end to the murderous police state and brutality. I just want to remind you that he goes on to say, notwithstanding the sellouts, the Negroidian sellouts and their misleadership, there is no excuse for the young people of today who have access to books and the internet. And what I would go on to add to this is that this is why we do what we do on this program, because we send it out and we hope to help with the educational process. And we thank all of you for your faithfulness and your integrity in the presentations that you make on this radio program. I just personally want to thank all of you. Brother Ralph and the rest of you, your mic is open before we leave.
Yes, I'd like to say that there is much happening, and I'm very glad to have to announce things. If you go to the BAI website, we know that Chris Hedges and Glenn Greenwald are in town, and they will be speaking and selling their books, etc. And so go to the website of BAI and see what's happening. And we must have meeting after meeting, and I forget who it was that said the price of freedom is constant meetings. And so I'm glad to see that we are out there meeting constantly, and we must have concrete actions behind our words. And I remember the early years when Queen Mother Moore said, you get 1 minute of talking for 1 hour of work, political work, identifiable political work. And the people on this program are workers. The people we meet in the street doing this political work, we meet at meetings where we're organizing to try to get something done. Sister Betty.
Is there anyone else who would like to chime in terms of response to any of the presentations that were made this evening? We extended the time so that we could make sure that everybody got a chance to get in their last word. All of your mics are open.
I always think of what happened in the outrageous lies told by the American government. And one of the things that I expected that there would be a red face when they tried the coup in Turkey, and it was turned back, and the American government said they didn't know of any communications between a gentleman in the Poconos and Turkey, and we all learned from Snowden that if you communicated with anyone from New York City to Brooklyn, the government had it, and yet these calls were going out of the country back and forth, and the American government said, oh, we don't know anything about it. I'd like to get on that phone, and if it's true, that would be the only phone or the only communications in America that are not monitored. but it is an amazing situation that we were going through, and Sister Betty is going to wring my neck if I don't get off and let someone else speak. Your mics are open.
Well, this is very interesting about this whole talk about, you know, we will never be socialist, you know. Are we going back to the McCarthy era? Are we going to have to go through this again? Are we going to have, you know, more House Un-American Affairs Committee hearings? Or is everybody who doesn't believe in whatever it is they want to call this that we're living in, proto-fascism? If we don't believe in proto-fascism, are we all going to be hauled off into concentration camps?
Maybe.
This may well happen, right? So
right.
we should really get prepared. That's where we seem to be going. And, really get prepared and, get ready for some major battles in the forthcoming days and years. And certainly we need to prepare other people for this as well, because most people are not as we are, paying attention. So, you know, they will be totally surprised and befuddled by all this and probably not know what to do. So, you know, it's not just
Reba,
us, it's everybody else.
Yeah, thank you. I really thank you for bringing that up. I really think we need to bring up, I feel the need to bring up Russiagate with so many of people who I thought were comrades but are becoming liberal about Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, needless to say, collusion has still not been proven and blah, blah, blah. And
mm-hmm.
The last thing we need is to provoke Russia. And, in fact, Larry taught me we can't say nuclear war because war implies victors, and there's
right.
no victors in a nuclear war, so I'm beginning
That's
to say
sure.
nuclear holocaust or nuclear winter. But anyway, it sounds like we're off. On that positive note, I agree with you that we need to hold people to the Democrats trying to provoke a war with Russia.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
Oh. We love this song.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains